The Meal with the Brothers, Fragrance of Myrtle. And here is how it ran off in its appointed hour. Jacob's sons made their entry into Menphe, the house of Ptah, and alighted at the same inn as before. They were relieved to have brought Benjamin safely so far. During the nearly 17 days of the journey, they had handled him like a basket of eggs, partly out of fear of Jacob, partly because he was the most important member of their party, the indispensable evidence to convince the two-faced keeper of the market. Without Benjamin, they would neither see the man's face nor get Simeon back. These would have been reasons enough to treat the little one like the apple of their eye, to give him the best in food and lodgment, and guard him as they did their precious water supply. Fear of the man stood in the foreground, and behind it, fear of the father. But behind those was still a third motive for their assiduity, namely, that they wanted to make good in Benjamin what they had sinned in Joseph. For the memory of him and of their evil deed was astir in them now after all these years, owing to the events of their first journey. It had risen up out of the drift of the years, till now it seemed only yesterday that they had sold their brother and uprooted a stem out of Israel. Retribution was in the air. They felt it like a hand drawing them to an accounting. A zealous care for Rachel's second child seemed to them the best means of making the hand relax its grip. They dressed Benjamin in a fine, gay smock with fringes and draperies to introduce him to the lord of the land. His furry thatch of hair they anointed till it truly looked like a shiny helmet. They lengthened his eyes with a pointed pencil. But when they announced themselves at the great office, where tickets were issued and grain delivered, they were sent on to the provider's own house. That alarmed them, as everything alarmed them that did not go as it had before, and seemed to involve them in fresh complications. Why were they set apart and sent to the man's private house? Did it portend good or ill? Possibly it had to do with the money returned to them in so strange a way. Perhaps the trick was now being used against them in a new trick, and because of the money they had carried off, all 11 of them were now to be enslaved. They had the wretched money with them as well as more for fresh supplies, but the fact did little to reassure them. They were strongly tempted to turn round, not to show themselves to the man, but to take refuge in flight, and particularly because they feared for Benjamin. But the little brother spoke up boldly and insisted on being brought before the keeper of the market. He was adorned and anointed, he said, and he had no reason to hide from the man. As a matter of fact, neither had they, for it was only a mistake that the money had been returned, and innocent men must not behave as though they were guilty. Yes, guilty, they said. A little guilty in general, they always did feel. Not in this particular case, of course. It was only that they never did feel quite comfortable. He, Benjamin, could say what he liked. He was always at home. He had never been exposed. He never found unexplained money in his feed bag, whereas they had had to be out in the world, where it was hard to keep oneself entirely pure. Benoni tried to cheer them. The man, he said, was a man of the world. He would understand that kind of sense of guilt. About the money, it was certainly a puzzle, but probably perfectly all right. And had they not come, among other reasons, in order to give it back? But they knew as well as he did that Simeon must be released, and that they had to have more provisions. There could be no talk of running away. That was to be called spies and thieves, and brother murderers to boot. They knew it all as well as he did. They knew they had to face the music at the risk of being made slaves all round. The delicacies they had brought with them, Jacob's presents and bribes, the pride of their native land, gave them a little hope, and they felt something might be gained by trying to speak first with that pleasant and equable steward, if they could get hold of him. This they succeeded in doing. They reached the gracious villa which Pharaoh had given his friend in the best quarter of the town, dismounted from their asses at the gate, and led them round the lotus pond to the house. And there he was, the man who had inspired their confidence. He came towards them down the terrace, greeted them, and thanked them for keeping their word even after this lapse of time. They presented their youngest brother, at whom he looked round-eyed, and said, "Bravo!" The animals were led round to the courtyard, where the servants unloaded them and carried into the house the bales containing Canaan's pride. Mysakhmeh led the brothers up the steps, and as they went, they consulted anxiously with him about the money. Some of them had already begun as soon as they saw him, almost from afar, so eager they were. "Worthy house steward, head superintendent," said they, "thus and so it was. Incredible as it seems, so it was." But here was double the money, for they were honest men. They had found the previously paid-out silver, first one of them and then all of them, in their feed-bags at the first camp, and the mysterious treasure-trove had greatly troubled them. Here it was again, full weight, along with more money for the new purchases. His master, Pharaoh's friend, would not lay it up against them and condemn them. They all talked at once. They tugged his arm in their distress, and vowed that they would not enter under the beautiful doors of the house unless he swore that his master was playing them no trick, nor laying the mysterious chance to their charge. But he was calmness itself. He quieted them and said, "Calm yourselves, my friends. Do not be afraid, for everything is in order, or even if out of the natural order, it is a benign miracle. We get our money, and that must content us. It is no reason why we should play tricks on you. After all, you have told me I can only assume that your God and the God of your fathers amused himself by putting the treasure in your sacks. No other explanation suggests itself to me. Probably you are his good and faithful servants, and he would show you his awareness once in a way. That one can understand. But you seem to me very much excited, and that is not good. I will have some foot baths prepared for you, first for hospitality's sake, for you are our guests and are to take the meal with Pharaoh's friend, but also they draw the blood from the head and will have a soothing effect. Now go inside and see who is waiting for you in the hall." And lo, inside there stood their brother Simeon, quite unattended, and not in the least hollow-eyed or wasted, but as bouncing and heroic as ever. He had fared very well, he told his brothers as they crowded round him. He had lived in a room in the office building, and been very comfortable for a hostage, though he had not seen the Moshel's face again, and had lived in fear lest they come not back. But the excellent food and drink had kept him up. They asked Leah's second to forgive them for taking so long on account of Jacob's obstinacy. Of course he would know how it was, and of course he did, and he rejoiced with them, especially with his brother Levi, for the two ruffians had missed each other sorely. There was no kissing and embracing, but they could scarcely leave off punching each other in the ribs. The brothers all sat down together and washed their feet. Then the steward led them into the hall where the meal was laid out, magnificent with flowers and fruit and beautiful tableware, and he helped them arrange their gifts on a long buffet, spices, honey, fruits, and nuts, to make a fine display for the master's eye. But presently Mysacme had to hurry away, for people were arriving, and Joseph came home with the Egyptian gentleman whom he had invited as his guests of the day, the prophet of Ptah, the champion of the god, the chief surveyor, and the masters of the books. He came in with them and said, "Greetings." They fell on their faces as if they had been mown down. He stood a little while, rubbing his fingers across his forehead. Then he repeated, "Greetings, friends. Stand up and let me see your faces that I may recognize them. For you recognize me, I see, as the keeper of the market of Egypt, who had to behave sternly to you because of this priceless land. But now you have appeased me and reassured me by your return in your proper numbers, so that all the brothers are assembled in one room and under one roof. That is capital. Do you notice that I am speaking to you in your own tongue?" "Yes, I can speak it now." "The other time you were here made me aware that I knew no Hebrew, and it annoyed me. So since then I learned it. A man like me can do such things in a twinkling. But how are you all, anyhow? And first of all, is your old father still alive, about whom you told me? And is he well?" "Your servant, our father," they said, "is very well, and keeps his usual state. He would be much touched by the kind inquiry." And they fell down again with their faces to the pavement. "Enough of this bowing and bending," he said. "Too much, in fact. Let me see. Is that your youngest brother you told me about?" he asked, in rather clumsy Canaanitish, for he was really out of practice, and he went up to Benjamin. The Benedict standing there in his fine garb, respectfully raised his clear gray eyes with their usual expression of gentle sadness to Joseph's face. "God be gracious to you, my son," Joseph said, and laid his hand on the other's shoulder. "Have you always had such good eyes, and such a fine shining helmet of hair, even when you were a little urchin and ran about in the meadows?" He swallowed. "I will come back in a moment," he said. "I will just—" and went out quickly, probably to his own sleeping chamber. He came back presently, with his eyes fresh washed.